Tuti jana bahala ba, gurbharir hari. Yashoda nandana vraja jana ranjana. Yashoda nandana vraja jana ranjana. Yamuna tira vanachari. Yamuna tira vanachari. Sita Ram Jaya Sita Ram Raghupati Raghavati Taram. Sita Ram Jaya Sita Ram Raghupati Raghavati Taram. Sita Ram Jaya Sita Ram Sita Ram Jaya Sita Ram. Sita Ram Jaya Sita Ram Sita Ram Jaya Sita Ram.
Jai Sita Ram, Jai Srila Prabhupada, Om Shivaya, Krishna Saya, Bhutale, Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami, Namaste Saraswati, Gauravani Bhachani, Lord Krishna, Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami. Hare Krishna. Well, thank you all for coming. I see some people I haven't seen for a while, or maybe some newer people, and we have met some of our guests from Mayapur Dham. Thank you all so much for being here with us. Very nice. And today, of course, well, Thursday was the appearance day of Lord Ramachandra, and since we have our Sunday program today, we are celebrating again and talking about the wonderful appearance and activities and pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Ramachandra. Okay. So. Okay, well, we don't have anything on the screen. I'm going to just read, I'll just read myself. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 10, which talks about the appearance of Lord Ramachandra. Now, of course, Lord Ramachandra's pastimes are vast. I was trying to read even a condensed version of the Ramayana, one by, who's the devotee? Krishna Dharma, is it? Who wrote it? Krishna Dharma. He wrote a very nice version of it, you know, but even it's condensed because the original Valmiki's Ramayana is 25,000 verses, which is 50% longer than the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. So trying to even capture just a few pastimes or just a little bit is so difficult. So anyway, we'll just try as the best I can to at least understand some of the highlights and the importance of the appearance of Lord Ramachandra. So I'm going to start with this verse, the second verse of the chapter. Tashapi Bhagavanesha Saksha Brahma Mayohari Amshamshena Chaturdhagat Putravat Pratita Sarai Rama Lakshman Bharata Shatrughna Iti Samgaya. This is the translation by Srila Prabhupada. Being prayed for by the demigods, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth Himself, directly appeared with His expansion and expansions of expansion. Their holy names were Ram, Lakshman, Bharata, and Shatrughna. These celebrated incarnations thus appeared in four forms as the sons of Maharaj Dasarath. Now, of course, when Lord Ramachandra appears, he appears in the Treta Yuga, probably about at least a million years before Lord Krishna. I'm not sure of the exact time. I think it is the Treta Yuga of the previous day, isn't it? Or the the previous yuga. It's not this Treta Yuga. It's the one before that. So it's really a long time ago. We're talking about millions of years here. But at any rate, he appears quite a while ago, and he appears with his four brothers, the four brothers together, has been described in this verse of Lakshman, Bharata, Shatrughna, along with Lord Ramachandra. And as mentioned here, these are actually the four members of the Chaturvyuha, Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Aniruddha. In the same way that Krishna appeared, of course, Krishna is Vasudeva, Balaram is also known as Sankarshan, and Krishna's son is Prajumna, and grandson is Aniruddha. So they do appear with Krishna in this, in the full forms like that. So Lord Ramachandra is considered a Leela avatar. He's an incarnation of God who comes to perform very specific pastimes. So I want to talk a little bit about the similarities and differences between Krishna, who is the avatari, the original source of all the avatars, as it says in 1328 of Bhagavatam, Ete Chamsa Kala Pungsa Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. So after all the different incarnations, including Lord Ramachandra, are mentioned in the Bhagavatam, one after the other, in their glories, then Śrīla Goswami says, all of the above mentioned incarnations are either plenary portions or portions of the plenary portions of the Lord. The Lord Śrī Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. So we might say, well, we just read in this verse that Ramachandra is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Well, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How can that be? Because he's called a plenary portion. Now, plenary, anyone know what that word plenary actually means? One who is fully empowered. In other words, sometimes they call an ambassador the plenary potentate something or other. And that word plenary is because he's the ambassador, which means he can fully represent the king or the president or the head of the country. So Lord Ramachandra is completely empowered. He's not Krishna. Krishna, the example Prabhupada gives is if you have a lamp and you have an original lamp and you light another lamp and that lamp lights another lamp, so you have different lamps and they all look like they have the same candle power. They can perform the same activities of emitting heat and light. But there's one original. So Krishna is the Adi Purusha. He is the original, you know, the Swayam Bhagavan, person of Godhead, but he has his empowered incarnations that come for specific functions. Now, most of us know the pastimes of Ramachandra. If you're from India, you probably heard these since you were a small child, just like our children were reciting, you know, here now, because they have been around for a very, very long time, and they're very, very popular. Ramachandra is extremely known and popular throughout the world, but mostly in India, and has wonderful pastimes that are recited. And as I said, they are practically unlimited. So what I'm going to read now, just to make sure we all kind of know the general scope of what he did, and before I go on to some of the specifics, this is the chapter summary from chapter 9 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now the Bhagavatam only gives two chapters to Ramachandra, because most of the space is given Lord Krishna's pastimes in Bhagavatam. But chapter 9 describes all sort of the adventures all the way to Lanka, killing Ravan, etc., until he comes back to Ayodhya. Then the next chapter is about his rule or his kingdom, which I'll talk about. But this is a summary, I guess, as the Srila Prabhupada or his disciples wrote this. It says, the son of Maharaj Katvanga is Virabahu, and his son was Raghu. Now, we say Raghupati, talk about the Raghu dynasty. Raghu is one of the very important descendants of, I think, great-grandfather, or great-great-grandfather of Ramachandra. Son was Raghu. Son of Raghu was Aja. The son of Aja was Dasarath, and the son of Dasarath was Lord Ramachandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By the way, I believe it was Aja who had a battle originally with Ravana. And Ravana, Aja was a tremendous fighter, great king, great, you know, but finally Ravana was, you know, just undefeatable. Finally, he kills Aja, and on his dying breath, Aja says, I curse you that a member of my dynasty will come later, and he will kill you. So that was, of course, Ravana got cursed by several different people. He had everything going against him. He thought he was invincible, but he was doomed. His end was foreshadowed by so many of these different incidents that happened. But anyway, so we had Aja, then we had Dasarath, the great, wonderful king who was the father of Lord Ramachandra. When he descended this world, the four quadruple expansions, Ramachandra, Lakshman, Bharata, Shatrughna, great sages like Valmiki, who were actually in knowledge of the absolute truth, described his transcendental pastimes. And Srila Shukadeva Goswami describes these pastimes in brief. So now this is a little synopsis of what happens. Lord Ramachandra went with Vishwamitra and killed Rakshasas like Maricha. After breaking the stout and strong bow known as Haradanu, that was actually from Lord Shiva, the Lord married Mother Sita and cut down the prestige of Parashuram. To obey the orders of his father, he entered the forest accompanied by Lakshman and Sita. That's a whole story in itself. There he cut off the nose of Shurpanaka and killed the associates of Ravana, headed by Kara and Dushana. Ravana's kidnapping of Sitadeva was the beginning of this demon's misfortune. In a previous appearance, Sita had actually also cursed Ravana because he tried to actually forcibly, well, I guess assault her is the only way I can say it. You know, he wanted to take her for one of his wives or one of his harem or whatever it was. And she cursed him and then disappeared into the earth. Later, of course, to be found, dug up from the earth by her father, Janaka. At any rate, so he kidnapped Sita. It was the beginning of the demon's misfortune. In other words, that was the end for him. When he kidnapped Sita, his death was certain. Ravana's kidnapping Sita. Okay, when Maricha assumed the form of a golden deer, Lord Ramachandra went to bring the deer to please Sita Devi, but in the meantime, Ravana took advantage of the Lord's absence to kidnap her. When Sita Devi was kidnapped, Lord Ramachandra, accompanied by Lakshman, searched for her throughout the forest. In the course of the search, they met Jatayu. Now, of course, Jatayu was this large eagle, very large, powerful eagle, but he was very old, and he was a great devotee of Ramachandra. Where was I? In a very fierce battle, Ravana cut off Jatayu's wings and killed Jatayu. It's very sad. I always felt it was a sad part. But Jatayu was able to get the darshan of Ramachandra, behold his beautiful form, his lotus feet at the time of death, and of course went back to the planet of Ramachandra. In the meantime, Ravana took advantage. When Sitadeva was kidnapped, Lord Ramachandra, accompanied by Lakshman, searched throughout the forest. Then the Lord killed the demon Kabanda and the commander Vali and established a friendly relationship with Sugriva, king of the monkeys. After organizing the military strength of the monkeys, and going with them to the shore of the sea, the Lord awaited the arrival of Samudra, the ocean personified. But when Samudra did not come, the Lord, the master Samudra, became angry. When Samudra came to the Lord with great haste and surrendered to him, wanting to help him in every way, the Lord then attempted to bridge the ocean, and with the help of the advice of Bibhishan, remember Bibhishan was Ravana's brother, but he was not a demon, he was actually a devotee. He attacked Ravana, and then of course they built the bridge to Lanka, and with the monkey army, they all brought stones, and of course with Ravana's great power, he was able to mystically float all of these stones and build a bridge to Lanka. Previously, Hanuman, the eternal servant of the Lord, had set fire to Lanka. And now with the help of Lakshman, the forces of Lord Ramachandra killed all of the Rakshasa soldiers. Then Lord Ramachandra personally killed Ravana. Mandodari and the other wives lamented for Ravana. In accordance with Lord Ramachandra's order, Bibhishan performed the funeral ceremonies for all the dead in the family. Lord Ramachandra then gave Bibhishan the right to rule Lanka and also granted him a long duration of life. The Lord delivered Sita Devi from the Ashoka forest and carried her in a flower airplane to his capital of Ayodhya, where he was received by his brother Bharata. When Lord Ramachandra entered Ayodhya, Bharata brought his wooden shoes. Bibhishan and Sugriva held a whisk and fan. Of course, Bharata had been ruling the kingdom in his absence, but Bharata was so humbled, so much loved Lord Ramachandra, that he actually put Lord Ramachandra's shoes on the throne. He would not sit on the throne. And he said he considered he was just temporarily taking care of the kingdom for Lord Ramachandra. When Lord Ramachandra entered Ayodhya, Bharata brought his shoes. Hanuman carried an umbrella, Sutrughna carried the Lord's bow and two quivers, and Sita Devi carried a water pot containing water from holy places. Okay. Then the great sage Vasishtha enthroned him as a king. The chapter ends with a short description of Ramachandra's rule in Ayodhya. In chapter 11 continues the description of the rule of Lord Ramachandra, Sita's banishment and return to the earth, etc. We'll discuss some of those pastimes later in the next 20 minutes or so. So, Krishna's pastimes, of course, are very wonderful and are very relishable. And all the devotees love Krishna's pastimes. They're recited in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But Krishna's pastimes are not really to be imitated, right? Krishna does wonderful things. He expands, he marries 16,000 wives. None of us can do that. Lives scoreward on hill, kills many demons like Putna, Agasura, Kamsa. And his loving affairs with the so-called married gopis of Vrindavan. You say so-called because they weren't really. They were, anyway, that's another story. But basically, they expanded and their doubles stayed with their husbands. So their husbands thought they were them. And then the real gopis, who were eternal associates, eternal consorts of Krishna, had the relationship with him. That's why we say this is something that you have to understand on a very high spiritual level. And so Krishna's activities are not to be imitated. And sometimes people do try to imitate these activities, and they can become very, very degraded activities. And they completely misunderstand and misuse the stories. So this is one of the differences between Lord Krishna's pastimes and Lord Ramachandra's. Now, Lord Ramachandra also performed wonderful pastimes as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He builds a bridge to Lanka by floating stones in the ocean. When he went to get the hand of Sita, the way that he had to get Janaka, her father, the king of Mithila, had arranged so that a sacrifice, in the sacrificial arena, there was a bow that was given by Lord Shiva. And this wasn't like a little bow and arrow. This was huge. It took 300 men just to carry it, to lift it. And he said, anyone who wants to marry my daughter, Sita, has to be able to string this bow. Well, many kings and leaders, great rulers, they came, princes, they came. They couldn't even pick it up. What to speak of stringing it. They couldn't even lift the bow. So, of course, Ramachandra comes, very simply, picks it up with one hand, holds it over his head, strings the bow, snaps it in half. You know, and everyone was just astonished. Of course, Sita was very happy. She's in the balcony watching, and she, as soon as she saw Ramachandra, she said, this is my eternal beloved. This is who I want. And so she very happily came and put the garland around him so they could get married. So, another wonderful feat that he did, of course, killing Ravana and so many other demons. And he fulfills the purposes of the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita says, when the Lord comes, he comes for three purposes, right? Parichanaya, sadhanam, vinashaya, tuduskatam, samasamsarpatayo, thank you, sambhavami yuge yuge. To deliver the devotees, to please the devotees, to get pleasure by his wonderful pastimes, and also to save them from the clutches of the demons. Like actually, Ravana had completely conquered all of the demigods, except for Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. But all the others, Indra and everything, were under his control, under his power. And they were praying to him, please, please come and, you know, help us from this demon. So he comes to deliver his devotees, not only to save them from perils, but also to give pleasure by his wonderful pastimes, to vanquish the demons like Ravana and so many others, and to establish religious principles. And we're going to talk about how he established religious principles, because this is one of the ways that he differs a little bit from the appearance of Lord Krishna, where Krishna's pastimes, we say, are not really to be imitated. Lord Ramachandra set an example that was to be emulated by human society. Obviously not in the full, pure perfection of Lord Ramachandra, but he set example in every way because he was the perfect king. He was the perfect husband. He was the perfect son. He was a perfect devotee, a perfect disciple, and at the end, he was a perfect renunciate. So his instruction was mostly by the example of his life. How to be a Raja Rishi, a great, saintly, powerful king, and, you know, who performed wonderful activities and took care of all of his dependents so nicely. So no one can be great like Ramachandra, but we can follow in his footsteps to the extent that we can appreciate him, appreciate his qualities, and strive to emulate some of those, that perfect example that he set. So He was the perfect king. In fact, he was so powerful and such a great leader and great ruler that it's described in 1953 of the Bhagavatam that no one suffered within his kingdom. It says, when Lord Ramachandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was the king of this world, all bodily and mental suffering, disease, old age, bereavement, lamentation, distress, fear and fatigue were completely absent. There was not even death for those who did not want it. Now, can you imagine such a place? That's like a beyond a heavenly planet, you know, because of the presence of Lord Ramachandra. So all the citizens of Ayodhya were completely happy. Now, one of the reasons for this was because the king cared for the citizens like a father. This was his main purpose. Was very self-sacrificing, not to think about how to become rich and wealthy and be worshipped as the king of his emperor, but how he could take care of the citizens. And his kingdom, sometimes it's called Ram Raj. You hear that a lot, this idea of Ram Raj, still very popular. And Ram, because Ram Raj is the perfect kingdom, it's the perfect rule, way of ruling, and the perfect mentality to best take care of all the citizens in terms of their material needs, and also their spiritual needs. So, this is from 1950. I'll read this verse in purport by Srila Prabhupada. This talks about the type of leader that he was. Being pleased by the full surrender and submission of Lord Bharata, Lord Ramachandra then accepted the throne of the state. He cared for the citizens exactly like a father. And the citizens, being fully engaged in their occupational duties at Varna and Ashram, accepted him as their father. Srila Prabhupada's purport. He says, people are very fond of the pattern of Ram Raj. And even today, politicians form a party called Ram Raj. But unfortunately, they have no obedience to Lord Ram. It is sometimes said that people want the kingdom of God without God. Such an aspiration, however, is never to be fulfilled. Good government can exist when the relationship between the citizens and the government is like that exemplified by Lord Ramachandra and his citizens. Lord Ramachandra ruled his kingdom exactly like a father takes care of his children, and the citizens, being obliged to the good government of Lord Ramachandra, accepted the Lord as their father. Thus, the relationship between the citizens and the government should exactly be like that of father and son. When the sons in a family are well trained, they are obedient to the father and mother, and when the father is well qualified, he takes good care of the children. So the idea is that the leader must give protection and care and training and teaching to those who are under their charge. So sometimes there's a term that's sometimes used about servant leadership. It's a modern term about sort of an ideal way of managing and leading. But it's a modern term, but actually Lord Ram originated the concept because he was actually the original perfect servant leader. Now the Vedic system, of course, was a monarchy. There was a king. And generally, the oldest son of the king became the next king. Generally, not always. And that's not so much appreciated today. Monarchy is not in fashion. And even in England, where they really they're very into the royal family, but there's no power there. It's just ceremonial. Nobody really wants to give any power to the royalty. And why is that? Because basically, the royalty is shown to be very corrupt and does not exemplify these types of qualities that we saw in Ramachandra, and this has not happened for hundreds of years. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 4.12.10, it says, a king is not meant to simply realize taxes from the citizen and accumulate wealth to spend in sense gratification. World monarchy has failed ever since king... Oh, this is Prabhupada's purport, I'm sorry. World monarchy has failed ever since kings began to satisfy their personal senses with the taxes accumulated from the citizens. Of course, whether the system is monarchy or democracy, the same corruption is still going on. So it also says in the Vedic literature, the king is considered to be the representative of God. In this age, however, with the corruption of the principles of religion, monarchy decayed and is now finally abolished. It says, and we see this because especially during a few hundred years ago, you see in European history, the monarchy tried to play off of this. They actually tried to present that they were the representatives of God. Now, see, this was some tail end of some idea of Vedic culture, because that should have been the case. However, it wasn't, obviously. They were not the representatives of God, and they just played that for their own advantage. you know, and lived extremely, incredibly prosperous lives and very rich lives, and, you know, most of the citizens were in tremendous poverty. But it says, actually, the supreme proprietor of everything is Lord Vishnu. He is the maintainer of everyone. The king, the father, and the guardian are simply representatives of Lord Vishnu, empowered by him to look after the management and maintain things. Therefore, it's the duty of the head of state to maintain the general populace in such a way that people will ultimately know the goal of life. And what is the goal of life? Svartagati means the ultimate goal, the highest goal, to worship Vishnu, or Krishna. So, anyway, those days are gone, but Lord Ramachandra did give us that example of what a real leader should be. Now, he was also a perfect disciple. The Dasarasa whole family and Lord Ramachandra were very dedicated to their guru, who was Vasishtamuni. But also any saintly sage person that would come, they'd be very much indebted to. So once Vishwamitra came to the kingdom of Ayodhya, he was a very, very powerful sage. He came and he requested a favor, and Dasarasa agreed, sure, I'll give you anything you want. He says, well, I want your two sons to come with me because we're being very troubled by these demons who are wrecking our sacrifices. So we need them to come and to get rid of these demons. Well, Dasarasa, of course, was horrified. Because he said, they're practically just past children. They're not even full grown. Like they were like probably late teenagers, you know. And he said, no, anything. I'll go and fight them. Anything. Don't take my sons. Well, finally, he was persuaded. Vasishtamuni, the guru, reassured Dasarath about, first of all, he said, Vishwamitra has so much power. He'll give them all the weapons and mantras. Don't worry about it. And said, okay, I got it. And that still he wasn't going to. So finally, Vasishta tells him privately, he says, okay, here's the real thing. Your son Ramachandra is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You've got nothing to worry about. He can take care of it. And, you know, Dasarath was shocked because, of course, he was in Vatsalya Rasa. He was thinking only that this is my son and I must protect him. But that assured him a little bit, so finally he reluctantly let them go. So, anyway, on their way with Vishwamitra Muni, first of all, they go to this very desolate place because these demons have destroyed everything. The vegetation's gone, it's bleak, everything. And particularly, there was this demon who was a woman named Tutaka. And Vishwarupa says, you have to kill her. She's just ruined everything here. And so, okay, they're going to fight her. But Ramachandra was kind of holding back. You know, he wasn't really trying very hard. And Vishwarupa says, I know you don't want to kill her because she's a woman. Because, you know, it wouldn't be right for, you know, to kill a woman in a battle. He said, but believe me, this is no ordinary woman. He says, she's a horrible demon. She's causing destruction, killing people. You have to do it. So he does. And when he does, the demigods became very pleased. And Indra and all the demigods come down. They shower flowers. And they tell, and Indra tells Vishwamitra, and he knows who Ramachandra is. He says, and they're very concerned about Ravana. And they want to get rid of Ravana, right? So how to best do that? Ramachandra's come. This is the opportunity. He says, give Ram all the most powerful weapons of the demigods. So Vishnu says, okay, I'll do that. So he gives him hundreds, he said there's about 1,000 different mantras and weapons and special weapons. He gives him the greatest weapons of Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu. All these weapons personified. I started to think of this, how personified weapons look. But anyway, they're all coming for it, and they're all coming, and they bow down to Lord Ramachandra, you know, one of the servants. He says, he just tells him, whenever I think of you, you come to me. And they say, yes, we'll do that. So he was very well armed, let's put it that way. And then we finally get to Vishwamitra's hermitage. It was a very nice hermitage. Many saints, sages were there. But it was being desecrated by demons, these two demons of Maricha and Subhanu, anytime they tried to do a sacrifice. So he said, you have to, you know, this is what I want you to do. You got to stop these demons. You have to kill them because they're destroying all the sacrifices of the sages. You know, they would come and they just shower this blood and pus and urine and stool and everything and just wreck everything, destroy their sacrificial arena. So anyway, they finally come and after about 6 days and the fight begins and Marichi, I'll just read this. This is from the Ramayana by Krishnadharma. Marichi was tearing apart the entire sacrificial arena area. Ram became infuriated upon seeing the devastation. He rushed forward towards the Rakshasas, calling to his brother, Watch now as I scatter these wicked demons who feed on raw flesh. They're actually man-eating demons. Even as he spoke, Rama continuously worked his bow. He sent swift arrows in all directions. The Rakshasas were stunned. They had not expected any resistance. Some of them closed quickly on Ram, covering him on all sides. Ram released arrows with deadly accuracy and speed. The Rakshasas were cut to pieces. Ram looked for Maricha. Seeing his huge form nearby, tearing at the sacrificial altar, Ram invoked a celestial weapon. He placed it on his bow. Although still feeling furious, he calmly said to Lakshman, I shall release the Manava weapon, presided over by the father of the gods, Manu. Rama angrily fired his weapon at the fearsome, roaring Maricha. The demon was struck by the mighty missile and lifted and flung a distance of 800 miles, landing in the ocean. Although reeling and struck senseless by Rama's arrow, Maricha was not killed. And we know he will come back later, taking the form of the deer, to help Ravana kidnap Mother Sita. So that's, I guess he didn't kill him so that pastime could later take place. Ram looked at Lakshman. See the force of that weapon, my brother. It easily hurled the demon a vast distance. Fear not, Lakshman, for I shall now swiftly deal with these blood-sucking demons. They are wicked and merciless and given a sinful axe. Having said this to his brother, Ram moved with agility, evading the rocks thrown by the demons. He invoked the weapon presided over by the god of fire, Agni. Fired from Rama's full extended bow, the weapon hit the Rakshasa Subahu full upon the chest, his heart torn apart. He fell dead on the ground like an uprooted tree. Ram then invoked the Vayu Astra, the powerful wind weapon. He fired it and a roaring gale went towards the Rakshasas. They were blown away like so many pieces of dust and debris, and those who were not killed fled for their lives. So this was a little passage for those of you who sort of have a little Kshatriya nature and, you know, kind of like those stories. Okay, I do. Hare Krishna. After that, they proceeded. Okay, then after they kind of recovered themselves, they proceeded with Fisherman Rup to Mithila, the kingdom of Janaka. And there, as we said, they had Shiva's bow, huge bow. He's strung. No one is able to lift it. Breaks it in half. This resounding, you know, noise goes through the universe practically. He marries Sita. And then, well, of course, they called for Dasarath and the whole family to come to Mithila. And apparently, Janaka was very happy about this because he wanted to form an alliance with Dasarath. So two powerful kings, they were friends, they could come together. You know, there was a lot of times these things were, you know, they kind of arrangements of practicality like that, these marriages. But for Sita and Rama, of course, it was a perfect union. They didn't care about that, you know, because they're eternal consorts. Anyway, he marries Sita. And then Vashishta and Visharup kind of, they suggested, and everyone agreed, then Lakshman marries Sita's sister, Urmila, and then Bharat and Shatrughna marry two cousins of Sita. So the families are really connected now. And, you know, so anyway, this all happened. Everyone's very, very happy with this arrangement, at least for now. Anyway, Lord Ram was also the perfect husband. And one of the ways that he was a perfect husband was he took this vow called Ekapatni Vrata. Now, in those times, kings could have more than one wife. It was very common. Dasarath had many, most of his brothers there by different mothers. All right. So, but he took his vow of only having one wife. And Bhagavatam 9.10.54 says, Lord Ramachandra took a vow to accept only one wife and have no connection with any other women. He was a saintly king, and everything in his character was good, untinged by qualities like anger. He taught good behavior for everyone, especially the householders, in terms of Varnashram Dharma. Thus, he taught the general public by his personal activities. So, although Kshatriyas were allowed more than one wife, particularly if they were very wealthy, Ramachandra set a higher standard. Although it was allowed, it was considered to be a higher standard that one was more advanced if he could just be satisfied with just one wife, one husband, you know, like that. So, of course, he gave complete protection to Sita. And when Sita was kidnapped by Ravana, of course, he would do anything to get her back. In fact, he destroyed the entire city, everything that Ravana had, killed his brother Kumbhakarna, killed him, destroyed everything to get back Sita. So we see in modern society there's not a lot of protection for women. We see that very often. they're not really protected or taken care of, and often have to be on their own, and, you know, women become pregnant, and then don't marry, and they take off, not their problem. You know, so we just see our whole society's degraded like this, where in a society like this, I mean, the women and children would always be taken care of. There would never be any abuse or anything like that. So Sita also was the perfect example of a chaste wife. Now, when Ramachandra was exiled to Dandakaranya Forest for 14 years, where he just had to live very simply, live off berries and roots and bark or whatever, trees, Sita, of course, was a very, very high class. That's not the right word. Anyway, she was... What's a good word?
Aristocratic.
Yeah, she was a princess. She was a queen, you know. She had thousands of servants, you know. She didn't go off and dig roots in the forest. So what he said, you shouldn't come. This would be so difficult. It'd be so hard living in the forest. He says, no, you're my husband, and whatever you do, I do. I stay with you. So, in other words, the perfect example. He was the perfect protecting, providing husband, and she was the perfect wife who would stay with him, you know, whatever his circumstances were. And of course, his brother also came with him, Lakshman. So, also being the perfect son, he followed his father's instruction, completely obedient. Of course, most of us know the story that he was supposed to become king. Now, everyone was happy about it. Everyone was delighted that Dasarath decided he was getting old. It was time to install him as, I guess they call it, the prince regent, or the one that was going to take over and become the king upon his death. And he knew he wasn't going to live that long. But we have the servant of Kaikeya. Kaikeya was one of the co-wives. She was the mother of Bharata. And her maidservant was named Mantara. And this kind of evil, envious Mantara turned her mind, of course this is all a pastime and it's explained in different ways later, but turned her mind so that she became very envious. Mantara convinced her that her son Bharata would be nothing, and she would be nothing. She would have no position whatsoever if Ramachandra became king. Well, she says, what can I do about it? She says, well, don't you remember? The king gave you two boons. Why? Because many years ago in a battle, Dasarath had been injured very badly and probably would have died on the battlefield. But Kaikeya was there. These were Kshatriya women, you know. These weren't like some, you know, we say they were maybe aristocratic, but they were also pretty tough. You know, these were Kshatriyas also. So she was on the battlefield there, and she took him from the battlefield and saved his life. And he said, I will grant you two boons, or whatever you want. He said, I'll save them for when I need them sometime later. He said, okay, fine. And he promised that he would give her whatever she asked. So what did she ask? The worst possible thing. One, that her son, Bharata, rather than Ramachandra, would become the king, and Ramachandra, just so there wouldn't be any trouble, would be exiled for 14 years. And of course, everyone is devastated. And Dasarath is devastated. Actually, didn't even live very much longer after that. This just broke his heart. What did Ramachandra do? Immediately accepted. This is my father's order. Even though he doesn't want to do it, he's told me I need to do this. I accept. And so he goes to the forest, lives for 14 years. And of course, there's a long story of the exile, the kidnapping of Sita. He makes the alliance with the monkeys. Hanuman comes, his great, great servant Hanuman, you know, one of the greatest Vaishnava devotees in a monkey's body, strangely enough. And then they build the bridge to Sri Lanka, as we mentioned, have the war with Ravana's army. This is like the Reader's Digest version here. We're going very quickly. Ramachandra kills Ravana with 10 heads. He has to cut off all of his heads. And then Sita is returned. Now, of course, when Sita came back, in case anyone ever had any doubts, because she was being kept by another man, and we know he was a man of very, very terrible character, this Ravana, you know, people might doubt her purity. So what she did was she agreed to enter a fire. They built a huge fire, and she walked into the fire, and she came out. Agni, the fire god, carries her out, and she was completely unscathed. So obviously proving her complete purity. Don't try this at home. But anyway, Sita, being the goddess of fortune, was able to do this. So it's a very, very wonderful story. And then they go back. He becomes the perfect king. The citizens of Ayodhya were all very happy. We'll go to the last part, since we're almost out of time, where he shows that he was also the perfect renunciate. Now, of course, he faithfully followed all the instructions of his guru and sadhus. He was a perfect devotee himself. He gave up the kingdom, the honor, his father's vow. And then returning, when he came back to the kingdom, the first thing he did, he was like a day away, ready to go into Ayodhya, his triumphant reappearance the next day. He sent Hanuman. He says, go talk to Bharata and see what his mentality is. They thought, you know, he's been king 14 years. Maybe he's attached to it. And Ramachandra is thinking, well, Bharata, if he really wants to continue being the emperor or the king, he says, he can have it. It's okay. So Hanuman went to him, and he could perceive immediately, talking to Bharata was so much of a devotee of Ramachandra, his older brother. He was so excited that Ramachandra was returning. And he was so happy to turn over the kingdom back to Ramachandra. So Hanuman reported this back, said, no problem. Bharata is completely on board. Bharata is a wonderful, wonderful devotee of yours. And so then he comes back, and the first thing he does, this is his no attachment, all the similar Brahmins, he divides up his kingdom in four parts, and he gives away the kingdom to the Brahmins. Now the Brahmins, they said, we don't need a kingdom. So we are just so happy just to have your darshan, to have your lotus feet in our hearts, to have realization of you, that you are coming for us. That's all we need. We give it all back to you. So he could, so Ramachandran is free to rule the kingdom. And so he showed great duty and dharma. And towards the end, and I always think the last part is kind of sad. It's almost heartbreaking, when Sita has to leave, but it's an interesting story. It goes like this. Once while Lord Ramachandra was walking at night incognito, hiding himself by disguise to find out the people's opinion of himself, he heard a man speaking unfavorably about his wife Sita. The man said to an unchaste wife, you go to another man's house, and therefore you're unchaste and polluted. I shall not maintain you anymore. A henpecked husband like Lord Ram may accept a wife like Sita, who went to another man's house, but I am not henpecked like him, and I shall not accept you again. Sukadeva Goswami says, men with a poor fund of knowledge and heinous characters speak nonsensically, which is what this was. Fearing such rascals, though, Lord Ramachandra abandoned his wife Sita Devi, although she was pregnant. But Sita Devi went to the ashram of Valmiki Muni. When the time came, the pregnant mother Sita Devi gave birth to twin sons, later celebrated as Lava and Kusha, and Kusha carried on the kingdom after Ramachandra. The ritualistic ceremonies for the birth were performed by Valmiki Muni. Being forsaken by her husband, Sita Devi entrusted her two sons to the care of Valmiki Muni. Meditating upon the lotus feet of Lord Ramachandra, she entered the earth. Of course, she came from the earth. She was came out when her father, Janaka, was plowing up the field in a sacrificial, some kind of ceremony, and she appeared. So now she goes back into the earth. Thus meditating upon the lotus, she entered the earth. After hearing the news of Mother Sita's entering the earth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead was certainly aggrieved. Although he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, upon remembering the exalted qualities of Mother Sita, he could not check his grief and transcendental love. So this is interesting, isn't it? I mean, even God can feel emotions like grief, spiritual grief, when his wonderful devotees are departed from him or separated from him. Because that's really what Krishna wants. Krishna wants to spread prema. Krishna wants to spread love and having loving relationships with all of his devotees, whether it's the goddess of fortune or whether it's you and I, just little devotees down here. So he couldn't check his grief. After Mother Sita entered the earth, Lord Ramachandra observed complete celibacy and performed an uninterrupted Agnihotra Yajna for 13,000 years. After completing the sacrifice, Lord Ramachandra, whose lotus feet were sometimes pierced by thorns when he lived in Dandakaranya, placed those lotus feet in the hearts of those who always think of him. And he entered his own abode, Vaikuntha planet, beyond the Brahma Jyoti. Then Shukadeva Goswami ends the chapter with the glorification of Lord Ramachandra, and we shall end with this last verse. Lord Ramachandra's spotless name and fame, which vanquish all sinful reactions, are celebrated in all directions, like the ornamental cloth of the victorious elephant that conquers all directions.
Great saintly persons like Markandeya Rishi still glorify his characteristics in the assembly of great emperors like Maharaj Yudhisthira. Similarly, all the saintly kings and all the demigods, including Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, worship the Lord by bowing down with their helmets. Let me offer my obeisances unto his lotus feet. Bhagavatam 9.11.21. Jai, all glories to Lord Ramachandra, Sitaram ki jai. Okay, well, I think it's time to end, and prasadam is being served, so you're all free to go. Hooray! So, but any comments, questions? What, is there a microphone? Mataji here?
Thank you for such a wonderful class. I really appreciate it. Just because it's recorded, so that this is 28th yuga cycle. Lagu Bhagavatamrita says that 24th yuga Lord Ram
24th okay.
did all the wonderful pastimes, and Prabhupada says Lord Ram appears in every Kali Yuga, every Yuga cycle,
right.
and he does 4.1 Bhagavad Gita.
So if he was in the 24th, that would be what, how was it, 4 million years in a in each cycle, Yuga cycle?
So
this is about 20 million years ago then?
The original Ram must be.
Yeah.
Whichever Ram is referred in Lagu Bhagavatamrita. But Prabhupada in 1969 was lecture says that Lord Ram appears every Kali Yuga, every Yuga cycle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And also in Bhagavad Gita 4.1, he says he appeared 2 million years ago, which does tie back.
I remember 2 million, I remember saying that. So 24th is what? It was one appearance, but he also appears every Yuga cycle.
He mentioned that in the class and the conversation.
Yeah, the Leela avatars, there are two kinds. They call some of them are regular, everyday, or every Yuga cycle, and some are like occasional, only come at certain times. So yeah, they're different like that. Thank you very much for that information. That was good to know. Anyway, a long time, but 2 million years at least. Anything else?
Thank you. It is said that the Marisas came from Marich. Marisas came from Marich. Maritsar. So Marisas, an island, came from Marich because he was kicked out, and his head was blown up to 800 miles. So he came from India to, from Ayodhya to Marisas. It's about 500 miles, I checked out.
Okay. What do you mean when he was Marisha was when he's...
Yeah, he went to Marisas. You know Marisa Island?
Oh.
Marisa
okay,
Island.
Okay, that's where it was? Ah, okay. So yeah, that's how it was...
I find out.
That's how it was named. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Any other...
But we cannot just accept unless there is a... some reference.
Scripture. We need a little scripture, yeah. it's probably, it may be there. Find a verse and, you know, from some Purana or something. Anything else?
I'll just end with it. When Bharat went with entire Ayodhya citizen to bring Lord Ramchandra back, there was a big commotion, devotional emotion exchange. And the king was Janaka, the father-in-law of Lord Ram. And he gave a very beautiful definition of love. Because Bharat was expressing his love for Ram, he said, unless you come back, I will give up my life right now. And his Shatrughna, his brother, was making fire of ready for him to, if Lord Ram don't agree, he will come back, put himself in the fire. So King Janaka as a judge, he is asking, according to scripture, because King Janaka is one of the 12 Mahajans.
Yes, yes.
So King Janaka says, according to scriptures, the definition of love that you are expressing, it has to be aligned with that definition. The love definition is a true lover is always attentive and very careful about the desire of beloved.
Uh-huh.
So you want to express that you will throw yourself in the fire, will it please Ram? Because you are expressing your love for Ram, can you ask him if it will please him? And Lord Ramchandra says, absolutely not.
Right.
So then Bharat found, oh my gosh, all my expression for love is not really love. So it's very
strong. Good. It's really
very turn over. Then Lord Ramchandra said, because you have so much devotion, I'll take over the kingdom, but I will not rule until my promise to my father turns back. So on behalf of me, you go and rule on my behalf.
Right.
So everything was solved so nicely.
I was just thinking when you were saying that most of the Mahajans have at least some section in the Srimad Bhagavatam where they speak at least some, a chapter or two, or sometimes much longer, depending on who they are. But Janaka we don't hear much about. Now, was this mostly in the Mahabharata where he...
It's in Mahabharata.
Mahabharata, okay. So that's where he really expresses his philosophical understandings. So, yeah. Yeah, I don't know how anybody reads Mahabharata. It's so long. Yeah. Okay, anything else? Otherwise, let's go take Prashanam. Thank you so much. Have a worship, Prabhupada. Go run Chandriki.
Jatayu had no hope of defeating Ravana. Jatayu had no hope of defeating Ravana. He wasn't trying to kill him. He was trying to stop him from going to the next Mahurta. And the Mahurta that he was taking Sita, he would have won him. But by holding to the next Mahurta, then anything taken is returned. So I was just trying to hold him back.